Powerful Radio is pleased to present Church of the Masses with award-winning Catholic columnist, screenwriter, and media consultant, Barbara Nicolosi.
Oh, hello. Welcome back to Church of the Masses. This is our unique little radio show where we talk about the intersection of faith and culture. You know, we spend a lot of time, a lot of people in the church attacking the culture, attacking media. And let's face it, they do have it coming. But that isn't getting us anywhere by constantly just, you know, calling out the darkness. And so this show is trying to point to people that are bringing some light into the media, into the culture, people who are doing it, getting stuff done. And so we have one of those people that's going to be our guest for our second and third segment today, one of my friends, and she's a producer, and she's got so much stuff in the hopper that we are going to have her next week too. So so that's pretty cool. Thanks to know that somebody's getting something done. So usually we start here with a kind of look at the news and what's been going on. You know, my thing is screenwriting and producing. That's the world that I came out of. But I have also been a producer of plays, and I have been an executive producer of everything from documentaries to short films to web series. And I'm now an educator. I've got my PhD from University of Bath Spa in England, and on creative writing. So kind of straddle these two worlds of making stuff and then talking about it and teaching people how to do it. So so my thing here also is that I'm a very committed Catholic. I came out of the community of the Daughters of St. Paul. It's a community dedicated to the media. And so we prayed for the media, and we prayed for people who were making media. And if only I had known I was going to be one of those people someday, maybe I wouldn't have fallen asleep so many times during my prayer times as a nun, but that's another story. So anyway, so here we are. So I'm looking at the news for the week, and one thing I just want to see right off the top as an announcement is we're having a conference here in Hollywood on August 17th at the Mears Center, in which is on the grounds of the Hollywood First Presbyterian Church, which has been kind of a central gathering place for the Christian community of Hollywood these past 25 years. And they have an amazing campus there with big facilities, as many Protestant churches do have great facilities. Most of the time when I go speak at Catholic churches, they hand me a microphone that doesn't work and they don't have PowerPoint or anything. You go to the Protestant churches and their media is amazing. And anyway, so the people at the First Presbyterian Church in Hollywood have been amazing in terms of hosting events for Christians. And they're hosting one for us, which is the 20th anniversary of Act One. And so we are celebrating that all year long. And we're going to be looking at, the question is, what have we learned in 20 years since we started this program? So we're looking at, how can we raise the bar? One of the things that I've been dismayed about, and I haven't made any secret of it, is how too many, I think, of our graduates, of our alumni from the Act One program have ended up making their living now kind of pandering to the Christian audience. And that is making evangelical movies, the kind of bad pure flicks films that we've seen come and go. And it's good work if you can get it. Any work is good, I suppose. But we didn't want that when we started the Act One program. Our vision was to create new parables for the people of our time, and not just pandering to our own people and saying, you know, rah, rah, we're good. I didn't ever envision Act One being about creating propaganda for the right. And yet, it seems to me that that's where we are too often. Now, not to say that we need our stories to be told. We need projects about our heroes. We absolutely do. But we also need to be people that are on regular television shows and, you know, right up there in all the studios and networks and production companies, being there among them, and not just downstairs in the little cheap Christian niche. So anyway, August 17th, we're having a conference about this, and we have some new people coming in that are not the usual suspects that we've been listening to in the Christian community of Hollywood. We've got Enzo Salveggi. He's a liturgical artist. He's going to talk about crafting religious metaphors in art and in movies, because I really think that is the key to great art in the visual medium of storytelling, and that's going to be metaphors. I think learning how to do that, how to become adept at metaphors, is something that our community really needs to learn. We're also going to have Tom Bernardo. He's writer-producer from Bosch, which is a show you know I'm a big fan of. We had him on here a few weeks ago. We're also going to have Dr. Zach Cheney. He's going to talk about beginning to put together an aesthetic of Christian filmmaking. What would that involve, both matter and form, in terms of how could we come up with, this really is a Christian film, not just because somebody says a Bible quote in it someplace. Yeah. And then I'm going to be giving a talk. We're going to have talks about writers groups and what makes them work, et cetera. So anyway, if you are interested in doing visual storytelling, or you know somebody who is, please send them to the Act One website. That's Act One Program. And look down the bottom of the first page. They have a thing there for 20 years of Act One. And you can click on that and come to the conference August 17th. We'd love to have you. So some announcements that happened this week. One that, I think we set a lot of people of faith's head absolutely on fire, exploding, and their heart pounding, and that is that Terrence Malick announced that his next movie is going to be some kind of episodes of the life of Christ. And Malick is, of course, the guy who did Tree of Life, which many Christians really liked. I like Malick. Malick's Badlands is one of my all-time favorite movies, but I find his later stuff just kind of self-conscious and a little bit over the top. I think he needs an editor very much. I thought Tree of Life had some really interesting stuff in it, but way too much interesting stuff, actually. Talk about overusing metaphors. But anyway, I think Malick's on to something about talking about transcendent truth in a different way in film. I think he's just a little bit self-indulgent in his filmmaking. Having said that, anyway, he's making one about Jesus now. And hopefully it'll be more profound than Tree of Life actually was. I think people fell all over themselves that Tree of Life was very profound. And I thought it's just a kind of cursory reading of the Book of Job as far as I'm concerned. Having said that, at least somebody's doing it, right? So anyway, Terrence Malick is doing something about Jesus. There you go. Everybody's very excited about that. All the Christian scholars, film scholars especially, extremely excited to see. And they're shooting that now in Italy, apparently. Another big news this week was that Toronto unveiled its lineup for the fall. So Toronto is really the first warm-up conference for the Oscars. And if you get in Toronto, these are usually the films that are going to be the most talked about for the Best Picture of the year. And one thing that I love about every time that Toronto comes out is, oh my gosh, we're almost done with the awful summer movies. Just very, the summer season is just so comic booky, and it just gets exhausting if you love good storytelling. There's just not a lot there. And so Toronto means, oh, there's better stuff coming. So when I was looking at what's coming, a couple of things caught my eye. So this movie, Harriet, is coming, starring the woman that was in the TV show Widows. Vivra, I can't say her last name. Anyway, she's very talented. She's going to play Harriet Tubman. They're doing The Life of Harriet Tubman, and I'm excited about that. I'm a big Harriet Tubman fan. I think something we can all get behind, this heroic woman who really either, I don't know if she started it, but she played a huge role in the Underground Railroad. And so this is something I'm looking forward to seeing, and I think they're going to do a really good job with it. I don't think they dare not do a really good job. So there you go. And hopefully the Republicans will all be the heroes because they were on the right side of that struggle, but we'll see. Anyway, another one that I noticed is that's getting a lot of buzz is Tom Hanks doing Mr. Rogers. And, it's funny, Mr. Rogers, when I was a child, I kind of despised that show because it just moved so slowly. But as I've gotten older, I kind of look back at it with some nostalgia. Anyway, I met Fred Rogers. We were both given an award by the Christophers years ago, mine for, pathetic kind of 2 or 3 years of Act One and his for like a lifetime of doing good. So I felt very much like we'd both, one of these things doesn't belong on this stage. But anyway, I did get to meet him and he was as gracious as you could imagine. Just lovely, lovely man. And so it's kind of cool. They're making a movie and it's going to be Tom Hanks, and it'll be an amazing performance by Hanks. This kind of thing he excels at. So that one I'm excited about too. And then there's one called The Two Popes, which is based on the book The Pope, which got a little bit of buzz earlier. And the guy who wrote The Popes, and it was McCartan, I think, he has written the screenplay, and it is about Francis and Pope Benedict, Pope Francis and Pope Benedict. And the wrap of the movie is, so it stars Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce, and they are going to show us what the real behind-the-scenes struggle to define the church's identity that is going on between Francis and Benedict. So, yeah, I've had a couple people read the book and tell me that the book was very boring and didn't have any insight in it at all. You know, I think this is the kind of thing that is going to look great. You have two amazing actors, and you're shooting sets that, you know, of the Vatican and then all the papal pageantry. It's going to look great. But do the people making this movie have any insight at all into the actual struggles going on in the church, or is it going to be kind of from the outside looking in? My sense is it's probably going to be that, and not a very insightful or fair or theologically astute assessment either. I think that would be very surprising. I think they're going to take the political route, and that's what we're going to see. But anyway, those are the films that, you know, kind of interesting to us people of faith that are out there. All right, well, stay tuned. We're going to have a dear friend of mine, Megan Harrington, coming to talk about her projects. She's a producer working here in Hollywood, so stay tuned. This is Church of the Masses on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network, and I am Barbara Nicolosi.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello again, and welcome to segment two, our second part of our hour. It's amazing how fast time goes in radio. It always impresses me. So here we are with a very cool guest, a friend of mine for several years now, and she was one of my students at Act One years ago, but now she has surpassed me. And as John the Baptist said, they must increase and I must decrease. So welcome, Megan Harrington.
Thank you, Barbara. It's great to be on the show.
Yes, here, let me just...
It's surpassed you. So
Megan is a senior producer on at Family Theater Productions, which is here in Hollywood, kind of the center of Catholicdom, in the way that the Mir Center has been kind of the center of Christendom, the broader Christendom, and certainly evangelicalism in Hollywood. I think Family Theater has that mantle as being the kind of center of what Catholic community, or at least serious Catholics in Hollywood. So she's a producer there, and she produced a very successful project I was very high on last year called The Dating Project. We're going to talk about in our next segment, and is producing a documentary now about Father Patrick Peyton, Venerable Father Patrick Peyton, who is the famous his famous line that you'll know if you were raised in any kind of Catholic context was, "The family that prays together stays together." And I know my mother used to say that to us every night as she dragged us to say the rosary together. So I didn't, as a child, I didn't have a high favorability rating for Father Peyton because his words were always kind of hurled at us. But having said that, we know, in fact, it worked with our family. So she's also now in post-production on a women's sports story called The House That Rob Built. My goodness. So Megan, so let's start, roll it back a little, Megan, and tell the audience, because one of the things we do here is try to encourage people out there to just start doing stuff, just throw your hat in the ring, start doing it. And it's like, yeah. So what was your journey to becoming a Hollywood producer, which you are now? What was your journey?
Well, I'm probably not going to start this way for very many people, but it started with jury duty. And I was on a jury duty with a child abuse case, and it was horrible. And I had never had spiritual direction before. And I went to see a parish priest who had just arrived, new Father Sean Raftus, who now is a really close family friend. Well, we started talking through jury duty and all that, and started talking about kind of what I wanted to do with life. I'd always felt this call, I think we hear that a lot as well, but this call, like making film and media and making things that are light and true and good and beautiful. And I just had put that in the back of my mind for a long time, kind of doing little things here or there in Missoula where I am from. And he said, well, I have a friend, Barbara Nicolosi. She runs Act One, and she set up breakfast with you. Mm-hmm. And I flew down to LA, and I remember specifically you saying, well, you're going to have to quit your job and come down and go through this program. And I said, well, I'm sure, I can't do that really. I've got a really, and you said, well, then you don't really want to do it. And I was like, wow,
I have like such nice,
it was so true. I don't think you told me necessarily to quit my job, but basically we're saying, I gave you a litany of excuses. You said, you don't want to do it. And I'm a family of 10 siblings. And I said, I'm just going to apply. I'm going to tell a couple. If I get in, I'm going to go. And so I applied to Act One, thankfully got in, and packed up my car and moved to LA in June of 2010.
Wow, 2010. And so here you are now, 9 years later, with three projects under your belt, huh? Or two and a half, right? Or more, right? Because you've done other things. So you came out here, and now you had an MBA, which really is a great thing for producers to have. How did your previous education kind of set you up for kind of entree into this business and maybe being taken more seriously or something?
Well, I was a non-trad in Act One, certainly in interning. So in a way, it was probably great. Oh, well, she has her MBA, maybe we could have her do XYZ, but you're still doing the same things that an intern would do, coverage, or you just might have a better understanding. I think broadly speaking, just having that education, going through the education process, was organization, time management, flexibility. And if I could go back, I would have waited to get my MBA and really specialized in finance or in accounting. But I was I actually played basketball at the university and had a scholarship. So I said, well, I'm not going to use that last year in the best way possible. But you know, to be honest, it would have probably been better to go back and specialize and know exactly kind of where you wanted to specialize with that degree.
Sure. But so, so you come out here and you go to Act One and then you get an internship at a place called Empower.
I had an Empower and Motive Marketing.
Okay, so Motive is Paul Lauer's group, right? They were one of the people behind The Passion, among other things, right? And Empower was founded by Steve McAvity, who had been the producer on The Passion, the line producer, and then he kind of started his own shingle, and so you worked your way in there. What did you do for them?
I was doing coverage, and then there was a... mostly coverage and looking at scripts or development in the sense of like, well, what kind of projects would there be out there? They were very open to you pitching ideas. But I ended up working for Motive initially and then went back to work for Empower on a project called Snowman. So I went into marketing. So I started out marketing with them on a project that was a feature kids movie.
Mm-hmm. Which was written by an Act One alum, by the way.
Yes, I know. Which was great.
I know. So, okay, great. So let's flash forward now. And so, well, let's talk about Prey because I want to talk about the dating project the next time. And then the next time you come, I want to talk about your new project and then the house that Rob built. But also I want to talk about your kind of thoughts and advice to people getting started. So, I watched this last night, and this is about Father Patrick Peyton. And so how did you get involved in this project?
Well, Family Theater Productions was part of the dating project as well. Mm-hmm. And so I met with Father Guffey, and I did know him previously. But we talked about things that they had coming up, and he had mentioned Father Peyton. This was, I think, in 2016 or 2017 in beginning part. And at the end of 2017, I sent a note saying, I was a contractor. So I was looking at my schedule and said, just checking in on the Father Peyton and kind of what's happening, if anything, for that, to just look at my schedule. And ironically, Father Peyton was just going to be declared venerable. Huh. So that put this documentary, really moved it to priority of getting that done. And they had done some research initially already for the project, but really production started, pre-production in January of 2018. And that's how it happened. It was a timing thing. I mean, I fell in love with Father Peyton. Yeah. I didn't know him, besides the saying that you were getting drugged to the rosary too. that's really all I knew. And that my mom had met him once, but I just fell in love with him.
You know, I was so struck watching the doc, and people can, by the way, you can go and watch the trailer at, I'm looking at it here, it's called PrayTheFilm.com. Go watch the trailer for the new story of Father Patrick Peyton, PrayTheFilm.com. But anyway, watching it, I was struck with your, just the multiplicity of interviews that you have there, you know, so many people. And my sense is that everybody wanted to share their story about him, that everybody had something that they wanted to say. And like, there's almost this kind of sense like, wow, we met a saint here. You know, we knew this guy, you know, that's how I felt watching it. Did you feel that way interviewing them?
Oh yes. Mm-hmm. Oh yes. And that, the magnitude of the man, of what he was able to do and the humility, it's just striking. He's very difficult and demanding too, I know, to work for, you know, 7 days a week. In some cases they were so busy, but they really did believe he was a saint. The people we were talking to, that when you were in his presence, there was something different.
Wow. You know, it's funny you say that he was demanding, and this is something that, you know, I heard about Mother Teresa. I remember, you know, meeting a bunch of her nuns when we were nuns, and we would go to a lot of things together, and, you know, they would be like, you know, Mother is quite exhausting, you know, and like she's very demanding. She's very tough. She's very uncompromising. You know, this is the something that said about, you know, our founder, the Daughters of St. Paul, Father James Alberioni, same thing, you know, that people who do great things in the church, they're very focused on their mission. Not to say that they're not focused on people, but they've been given this vision by God, and they know it very clearly what needs doing. And it's kind of like you either when you're around them, it's like, okay, get on board because God is with this person. But it's amazing to me, though, how some people will, you know, kind of gripe. And it's almost a sign that the person was a saint, that there are people griping, you know, that they were too tough or too uncompromising. You know, I always see that. Yeah, I don't think you get great things done in the church without, you know, just upending things. And that always makes some people uncomfortable. And so what are some of the things that Father Peyton kind of upended in terms of his, what are some of the things that kind of stand out for you that say, wow, this needs a documentary?
But initially, I kind of discovered him as we started the project. The saying, like you said, it's a famous thing. Even if you don't, that's probably the most famous thing about the movie is the saying, because everybody knows it, whether you're Catholic or not, it's something that rings true. What stood out for me about him is what you were just talking about, is his love of the Blessed Mother and his belief that what he was doing was what God entrusted with him to do as thanksgiving for his life. And his family was where he learned the importance of family prayer, particularly seeing your dad kneeling in prayer. It made such an impact on him that he knew personally what that did. And my parents also had us say the rosary on the morning before school. And through this process, I reflected on what a gift that was, that I didn't appreciate all the time, but it really made me appreciate how important it is for parents to set that example of prayer for their children, that when they get to that dark moment, if that happens, and it happens in all of our lives, he could fall back on prayer because he knew the value of it from the model of his parents. It's for me, a very family, pro-parent story of that gift of prayer to your children.
Yeah, no, there's a very beautiful moment in the doc where the story is of before he left for the States to go make his fortune, his father had him kneel in front of the Sacred Heart in the family, kind of the very poor house, but in front of the Sacred Heart in their living room and say, you know, promise that you will not forget the Lord. And I thought, my goodness, what an amazing kind of send off for a young person going off. And, you know, how many kids get that when they go off to college or whatever, you know, that's not, you know, that's so just beautiful. So, what stage is this project at? Does it need help still, or is it, it's got distribution? What are we going to see with it?
We are in the midst of negotiations for distribution. We are going to do a platform limited theatrical release. Okay. So 5 to 10 cities initially, and then grow hopefully from that point and really center it on prayer, a prayer movement tied into Lent. So we'll be looking at the end of February.
Okay, cool. And, so it will be in theaters at the end of February.
2020.
Stay tuned for a second next segment with Megan. We're going to talk about the dating project, which is she also produced. This is Barbara Nicolosi, and this is Church of the Masses Radio on the Virgin Most Powerful Radio Network.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151.
buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
And welcome back. This is Church of the Masses. We get our title from something someone sent me years ago, a 1930s movie critic, theater critic wrote, movies are the new Church of the Masses. They are places where people sit in the dark and listen to people in the light tell them what it is to be human. It's always kind of scary quote for me, but I think it rings true. I think that today people look much more to the culture to tell them what it is to be human than they do to the church. And so that's why we need people in the church to get busy in the culture. And our current guest is someone who does that. Megan Harrington is a senior producer for Family Theater Productions, which is one of the Catholic hubs here in LA for the industry. And we're talking about Megan's two projects, one, Pray, the Story of Patrick Peyton, which is going to be in theaters in February, documentary about this extraordinary man. Everyone knows about Fulton Sheen, justifiably, but Father Peyton, yes, he did that famous quote, but he did so much here in Hollywood by way of giving a foundation to the Catholics here in Hollywood. Actually, do you want to say something about that before we move on to the dating project? I mean, everybody knows about the Rosary Crusades, or maybe not. Maybe they don't, of Father Peyton. You know, I used to have the Father Peyton prayer book for the Rosary when I was in high school. And so everybody knew it was a devotion to the Rosary. But the whole thing of establishing family theater right smack in the middle of Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood, you know, does your doc go into that?
It does. You know, his whole goal is family prayer. So how am I going to do that? Well, I've got to get the radio. I got to get radio, because radio is what people are listening to. Then he moved to film and television. He just wanted to keep promoting his message, and he used media to do that. He just took a train. Someone said, you need to go to LA to get people to be part of your radio show. And he took a train, lands, gets a ticket from a nun who gave it to him, because in World War II, they were rationing tickets. So he ends up with this ticket, gets to the church, and just tells me, I've got to meet people to help with my show. I mean, he got all the stars of the time, really literally all of them that you could think of that are big names.
Yeah, I remember walking in their basement and seeing just pictures and pictures and pictures with every, you know, Frank Sinatra and Anne Blythe. And I mean, you just keep going down the list, a huge list, and having a mental blank right now. But everybody came in and did some stuff for him there. And my sense is he used to do their family funerals, their families when they were sick. He really kind of started this whole chaplaincy to people in the industry as a way of saying thank you for their involvement in the things he was doing.
And he really, what's one other thing about him is that when people called or people wanted to pray with him, he would stop what he was doing and he would pray, and he would make that phone call to the person who gave 25 cents. It wasn't how much money you had. It's what did you need? And prayer, he would stop and do whatever was needed if someone wanted to pray with him.
Wow. Wow. Amazing. And it's sad right now that we don't really have, you know, for a while there was Father Peyton, and then there was Father Kaiser, at Paulist. They were kind of the Hollywood priests, but right now we kind of don't really have one. Father Don, I think, was trying, and I'm not sure what's going on, but we're there. But, you know, we kind of, we really need to pray for a priest to be the chaplain to this industry, because it's missing that. It's been something that was present here for 50, 60 years, and then the last 15 to 20, it's kind of really not, you know, in the same way. So anyway, okay, so let's move on to the dating project. Now, this one came out, when did it exactly came out?
April of last year.
Okay, April of last year, and we saw it at the Los Angeles International Film Festival, and I'm so proud of you for getting in that, because it's not a Christian thing, you know, and it was like, cool, you made something that could play in a secular mainstream festival. And the audience just like loved it. And we loved it. And one of the things about this project that struck out to me was you laugh and cry during the unfolding of it. And that's so rare to achieve, right? Because you usually can get one emotion or the other, but they're opposite emotions. So it's very hard to have an audience experience both pathos and kind of the exhilaration that would lead to laughter, absurdity, you know, in the same setting, you know, but you do it, you pull it off. So tell us a little bit about The Dating Project. I know it's gone through, it's available now on DVD and digitally, but it's just too good. And I think for anybody out there who missed it, it's still very, very relevant, only a year old. So how did you get into this Dating Project movie?
Well, I was working at Empower Pictures, and I knew that they had a client that was looking for ideas for documentaries, a series, and Catherine Fowler Sample now, the other producer, we thought, you know what, what if we did something about dating? Because we went to dinner and there were 14 girls that were all single and married, and we're like, what's wrong? This is super weird. And so we said, let's explore that, but not just, you know, what's it like for us, but a cross sample of different ages and what does that look like? So we go from 18 to 40 in this new, you know, age of hanging out, hooking up, friends, the benefits, you know, is what is dating. Mm-hmm. And we were fortunate to get it funded. And I just am really grateful for that. It was a real gift to work on that project.
And so how long was it in production?
Oh gosh. In production, I think it's a year and a half. Mm-hmm. We were working in development on it for, you know, in the mornings and stuff, probably a year before that or 6 months. Mm-hmm. So, you know, from start to finish, it was a lot of time.
Yeah.
And which was good for the project because, you know, at one point, if we would have finished the film, it could have been pretty depressing.
That's true. That's true. You know, I think you are pointing to something about if you're going to be in this field, patience is not just a virtue. It's necessary. You know, it's like things that unfold on the screen in 2 hours take 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years sometimes to get to that 2 hours, you know? And I think that can be a big struggle for people. They want to see, you know, people hear, they get sick of hearing about your project, you know? And it's like every time they see you, what are you working on? Oh, I'm working on this dating movie, you know? And it's kind of like, yeah, you've been working on that for like 3 years, you know? You know? And, which in the rest of the world would be kind of like failure. But in Hollywood, that's just, you got to stay with it, right?
It's a relationship. Yeah, that's for sure.
So one of the things that's great about this is you introduced this professor from Boston College who is, I guess, a philosophy professor, but she has a class on dating. And she plays a kind of unifying theoretical kind of background to the project. So how did you meet her and how did that unfold?
Well, in the course of research just on dating and books, what was out there, Catherine's sister was interning at Empower at the time, and she came across an article about Carrie Cronin. And we started watching her YouTube videos, and they were so good, and she was so engaging and funny and really difficult to get a hold of. And we just kept calling her, I think finally till she probably just but I've got to say yes, or they're just...
They're wearing me out. It's like that quote in the Bible. No, good.
Yeah.
No, because she really adds something that otherwise would be just kind of anecdotal, but she gives it a more a kind of connecting thread. So the thing of this project is... the kind of underlying thing is that this generation, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but, you know, me watching it, this generation has lost... the ability to kind of take a chance getting to know people. What do you think about that? How would you say the kind of real, the underlying gut thing of the Dating Project is, the message of it is, the kind of unspoken thing? How would you put it into words?
I think what you said is true. And I part of what I realized is the overwhelming pressure on everyone. So what used to just be this generation is now creeping up into 30s and 40s and 50s. And we're all behaving in a way that nobody's really happy or feels very good about themselves or feels a sense of worth because we're treating each other as a transaction and as something that you buy and sell than as a human being. And just the loneliness, the profound sense of loneliness among people connected but so disconnected, and what young people are facing, it's pretty intense. Yeah. With the phone and with everything coming at them, it's a world that we just, I hope we can uncover more of what the damage that's being done.
Yeah, you know, it's such
in front of our faces.
It's such a weird dichotomy because in many ways we've never had a generation that knew more about each other's lives, right? We know so much about each other's lives. That, you know, oh, you just came back from Italy. I saw you, you know, on their trip there, and then you went to Venice, and oh, your dog died. I'm sorry. Like, you know, like because we post all of the minutiae of our lives, our friends have access to it. And yet, ironically, your documentary tells a story of people who are kind of so just desperately lonely and not able to really connect. And it's like, what is that about? So what is it? Is it the technology that's gotten in the way? Is it something the sexual revolution has thrown on the table? I mean, what do you think, Megan?
I really believe that it is related to the sexual revolution, the misplacement of sex now. It's not even, used to be pre-marital sex. And this, I think Mark Regeneres, this might be quoting him, but it's now pre-relationship. Like, you don't even know them. So the idea of taking a risk and having coffee, like she says in the movie, gives you more anxiety than sleeping with somebody.
Yeah.
Or being very physical with them. When that gets thrown off, as much as it's thrown off right now, it's hard to stay in a relationship. If you're like, well, I really like to wait on certain things. Oh, well, I mean, everybody's moving on because our innocence is stolen so much younger now.
Amazing. And you know, that is one of the really powerful parts of the film is, you know, somebody says that it's too intimate to have coffee with somebody. I could just have sex with them. You know, and it's kind of like, what? You know, but there's something just broken. And yet, please don't think that this is just a drag, this project. It's very funny and there's lightness to it and there's real pathos. And as you said, and it ends happy, you know, for at least for one of the characters, right, in the story.
So, yeah, that's right.
Thank God it took long. So the project is called The Dating Project, and you can still order it online at thedatingprojectmovie.com. Hey, Megan, it has been great talking to you, and I look forward to talking to you next week about your new project and the house that Rob built, right? Yeah? Very good.
Yeah,
so we will connect next week. This is Barbara Nicolosi. Stay tuned. I'm going to review The Lion King, the new Lion King that's in theaters.
This is Terry Barber reminding you, there's a women's conference coming up September 7th, 2019 at the Sacred Heart Chapel. Mary Danielle Barber will be speaking along with Barbara Nicolosi. They're going to be talking about true femininity, be who you are. This is going to be for your daughters, your mothers. Every woman should be at this conference. And the way to do it is go to virginmostpowerfulradio.org or call 877-526-2151. We'll be right back.
Buying or selling your home or your business property? This is Terry Barber. Real Estate for Life underwrites the Terry and Jesse Show, and they can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. And when they receive their referral fee, they will give 80% of it to a pro-life organization. Wow! That's 80%! RealEstateForLife.org, 877-LIFE-US1.
Now, back to Church of the Masses with Barbara Nicolosi.
Hello. Welcome to our last segment, Church of the Masses. And this is where I do movie reviews. I was going to do two. I was going to review Midsommar, which is a grown-up drama, that's in theaters right now, that's getting a lot of kind of pre-Oscar buzz. So I think, but I'm going to do that next week because I really want to give some time to this new movie, The Lion King, that's out there that Disney spent a fortune on, and talk about what's weird with it, why it's not working. So the movie is, if you're not aware, a remake of the animated project, the 2D animated project that is pretty much a family classic in the canon of Disney animated films. It's a beautiful film and had a great message about fathers and sons and the need for you to get past your fear of your failure, incorporate that into getting your life in your hands and then following your destiny. That fear couldn't hold you back in your own fear of failure. That was what was the message, the theme of the original Lion King, and it was beautifully realized in 2D animation. And the characters were wonderful. And everybody really, you know, there's not much you can say about that movie that isn't praise. The soundtrack was great. The acting was wonderful. And the animation was beautiful. But Disney felt the need to remake it. And so they remade it in 3D animation, CGI, character-generated images. And so there's a weird thing about this movie because it looks frame by frame like a nature documentary, like you've stumbled onto Nat Geo and you're watching at different moments, I'm watching the African Serengeti. But you're not. It's computer-generated imagery. And so then you say to yourself, well, why would they work so hard to make a film look like the real thing? What is that? You know, why? And that continues now with the characters, the various characters in the movie. That little baby Simba is so cute, the little baby lion cub, and they make him look really like a real lion cub. And then his father, Mufasa, the great lion, and, you know, all the lions just look amazing. All the animals do. They look real, but they're not real. And then when they start to talk, they can't quite pull that off because a real lion doesn't talk the way the 2D generated animated lions could, right? You know, so it's just very odd. Because you're like, why did they try so hard to make this all look real? What is the thing right now in the film industry using this new technology about making everything look real? And that, you get the sense watching the new Lion King that that's kind of what it's about for the filmmakers here, is that they're playing a game where it's like, how real can we make it look? If we wanted to watch a Nat Geo documentary about the Serengeti, we could do that anytime. That's not storytelling. That's not character creation. And the thing is that Walt Disney understood, and there's a great review, a very cynical review in The New Yorker on The Lion King, where he says he tells an anecdote of Walt Disney explaining from 1956... an episode of Walt Disney's Disneyland, that the whole point of using animation is to show impossible actions, but as long as you can kind of root them in something very human, some kind of cause and effect to that we can understand, then the audience will accept it. But the whole point of it is impossible. That's where animation begins. We're going to do something that the natural world doesn't offer us. It doesn't show. And so anyway, I think that The Lion King is less about being a great story of fathers and sons, and it's more about showing off. Wow, I guess you can't believe how, you know, that this isn't a real hyena or this isn't a real lion, right? That how much they put on that. So consequently, the movie has bombed. It's been failing pretty badly. It won the box office. It did win the box office at what, $185 million, but nowhere near what they were hoping for it. And it's not going to have much life because it's got a 52% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. This is just the death knell for a project. The audience likes it better than the critics. They always do. But still, this movie is odd. It's just very odd. And it was weirdly unaffecting to me in a way that the original animated movie was very effective to me. And it wasn't that I was a child. I wasn't. I was a grown-up watching that, too. But there is a kind of interesting thing going on, too, in the movie. So the gender stuff is also messing up this movie a little bit. So a movie that wants to be about the king, the young king and his father issues, that was a story you could tell very easily 15, 20 years ago. But now, if you do it, now you are committing all kinds of sins against gender, ideology and male supremacy and all of this stuff. So what ends up happening in the movie is Nala actually saves Simba, the older lion, when he comes back to fight Scar. She bails him out. I thought, there you go. That's one of the problems now, is that everything has to be subservient to the political agenda. And when the original Lion King was made, that wasn't the case. So there's that. Okay. So what is the movie about then? Still, it's about this community that. And again, there's kind of some kind of weird environmental thing going on, that Scar and the hyenas overhunt. That's what the problem is. They're overhunting. And so they strip the whole landscape naked. And that's why Nala goes to find Simba to bring him back. This idea of, and again, it just kind of made me wince, like the political agenda. It wasn't enough that Scar was rotten, you know, and that he was just a nasty, evil guy. It was, no, he's contributing to, you know, deforestation. And that's what makes him so bad. It was like, no, he killed his brother. It was fratricide. He's a rotten, rotten, evil snake of a character. It's just kind of funny that it kind of had to be given a real, you know, a real reason that the audiences will get behind. I didn't have any complaints with the acting. I think the actors did well, but it was just something strange in a movie that's celebrating the circle of life and creativity, that this movie, The Lion King by Disney, felt extremely uncreative, and it felt like it was something dead, not a circle of life, but something more dead. And so we're kind of bumping in again to this strange moment in cinematic history where they can do anything, pretty much. They can do anything as far as recreating a period or anything you can imagine that before they were like, oh, we couldn't ever do that on screen. They can almost do it now. They can find a way through the computer-generated technology. But that doesn't, with all that genius, and it doesn't mean that the movies are going to be creative and interesting and dare I say it, beautiful, because beauty is a marriage of not just look, but meaning. You have to have that radiance of what is this thing saying? And over again, they just don't seem capable of saying anything that means anything anymore, because everyone is so afraid. You know, we had an issue this week with the announcement of the Emmys, all the films, the projects that are being nominated for Emmys. And it was also noted that they don't have a host for the Emmys, and they're afraid to appoint one because the last time, you know, they appointed somebody to be the host of the all these award shows, it's been a nightmare. So Kevin Hart was supposed to host the Oscars, and then he was politically incorrect, so they had to, you know, can him. And so the Oscars this year did not have a host. And they actually, though, had a 12% audience increase over the prior year without a host. So now the Emmys are afraid to announce a host because there's no perfect person out there who will match up with where the culture is right now in terms of its demands, the secular culture's demands on perfection. And so I think this is killing storytelling. It's killing movie making. First of all, it's killing it because nobody wants to try anything new. Hence, let's resurrect The Lion King. But then even doing The Lion King, they can't do a fresh take on it in any way, really. They can only be very careful and cagey about not stepping on any toes. And the toes keep multiplying all around us. For example, the movie Cats is coming out. Yeah, the guy who did Les Mis is doing has done Cats, and we saw the trailer this week, and the trailer got ripped up and down for a whole bunch of things. But one of the reasons the trailer was ripped is that the heroine, cat, feline of Cats, is a black actress, but their cat fur they put on her is white, and so there was an outcry, a rage that the cat is going to have white fur. This is where we are. This is making it impossible to be an artist right now. Absolutely impossible, because the thing about being an artist is you have to be free. You have to be able to experiment. You can't go into it saying, you know what, I got to check all my politics before I can make a brushstroke here. It's like, no, an artist is to kind of respond to the cosmos, find what they have inside of them to say, and then say that freely. And what's ironic is that the liberal left, whatever you want to call them, they've championed that idea of the freedom of the artist for so many generations now. It's been their mantra. And yet they have now put so many constraints on themselves and on their community of artists that everyone is somehow being offensive, is being racist, is being, sexist, is being homophobic, is being whatever, you know, that art is getting stifled. And so when I watched this Lion King, I thought that. I said, this is a very, labor-intensive, highly wrought bore because nobody had the courage to really do anything fresh with this story. Nobody really could say anything new or anything even old with any authority. We've done that to the arts. So I'm not sure what the way out is for us, but I think hopefully we're going to get sick of this. I don't know how any society can keep up this level of self-loathing and scrutiny. Anyway, so I'm going to thumbs down for The Lion King. This is Barbara Nicolosi at Church of the Masses.
St. Faustina's Prayer for Priests. O my Jesus, I beg thee on behalf of the whole Church, grant it love and the light of thy Spirit, and give power to the words of priests, so that hardened hearts might be brought to repentance and return to thee, O Lord. Lord, give us holy priests. Thou thyself maintain them in holiness. O divine and great High Priest, may the power of thy mercy accompany them everywhere and protect them from the devil's traps and snares, which are continually being set for the souls of priests. May the power of thy mercy, O Lord, shatter and bring to naught all that might tarnish the sanctity of priests. For thou canst do all things. Amen. Virgin most powerful, pray for us.
Virgin Most Powerful Radio. sharing the gospel with clarity and charity.